Dilligaff, everyone. This is the Geeks of Doom Roundup. I'm Greg Davies, also known as CGT2099, and I'm here with Andy Sorcini, otherwise known as Mr. Baby Man. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing great. Yeah, and no, we meant to have an episode last week, and we didn't get around to it because we were, I can't remember why.
You had internet problems.
Right. The internet crashed. The internet was down, but we're working. We seem to be working today.
Yeah, I would die. I would die. That was me. If I had no internet, I would die.
It's been happening.
I would really die.
With my service provider, which is Charter, it's been happening like once a week now. And it's always been like an outage for like a whole day. So I'm going to have to talk to those guys because I feel like they owe me some, you know, some time that I'm paying for on a monthly basis.
I'm with a local company here.
Uh-huh.
It's a cable company. Because they're a local company, I had the unusual or what seemed to be an unusual request of them at the time, and that was, I just want internet. No television. I don't have a TV. I don't want TV. Mm. I just want the internet. So that was.
And they were like, "What?"
Yeah.
That's the thing. So, we've talked about that.
Fidelity Lawton represent awesome company. Throwing a plug there. I'm not being paid by them or anything
sure.
like that, but easily one of the best service providers I've ever come across. That's for sure.
You know, we've discussed this on the Drill Down many times about how cable companies are increasingly going to have to face up to the fact that. People are literally, I mean, they're cutting their cable and getting all of their TV from from the internet, and cable providers that also provide internet services are facing the reality that people just want the dumb pipe that comes out of the internet, you know, to give them all you can access internet. And they're not going to want the cable services because everything they can get off of the cable box, they can now get through the internet.
Yeah, there's a lot of cable companies that are also, I mean, this is old news for some, but they're stretching into telephony now. So they're looking
yes.
at analog and digital VoIP right. Communications as well. So, you know, they're branching out and they're going to have a lot to answer for. When Google's fiber starts spreading across the
right.
nation as well. So it'll be several years before we see any of it around, you know, stretching around the place. But, you know, it's happening. It's
yeah.
real.
It's the death knell for cable, I think, is what I've kind of painted it as in our show.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think you're spot on. So, but, you know, I totally screwed up the intro because I forgot to mention...
Yeah.
That the Roundup is the show where we give you a bit of a preview of what's coming up on the podcast Social Blend and the Drill Down, which is hosted here at geeksofdoom.com.
Uh-huh.
We also talk a bit of music and movies as well. And Andy, you've got a movie that you've picked out for us this week.
Yes.
And this is actually, now I've been meaning to, this is like, I'm going to have to put this to the top of my purchase queue now because it's mm-hmm. based on a novel by David Wong. Called John Dies at the End. So
spoilers.
Yeah. And this is a really, really good trailer, and it looks to be an exceptional movie that's going to be well worth checking out.
Yep. So yeah, this is John Dies at the End. It's based on a two book series. This is based on the first book in the series called John Dies at the End. And it's written by David Wong, who is it's the pseudonym for an author named Jason Pargan, who's writing as David Wong. And so there's two books in the series. One is called John Dies at the End, and the follow-up is called This Book is Full of Spiders. Seriously, Dude, Don't Touch It. So if this movie is a success, we can maybe they'll change the sequel movie to This Movie is Full of Spiders. Seriously, Dude, Don't Watch It.
Yeah.
But this movie is directed by Don Coscarelli, and I'm sure I'm sure that you're familiar, Greg, with Don Coscarelli.
He was well known for the Phantasm movies.
For the Phantasm movies, that's right, and the Beastmaster and Bubba Hotep.
The Beastmaster. Now that's a movie title I haven't heard in eons.
So this is a novel that is like those others, has a mix of horror and comedy. So I'm really looking forward to this. But anyway, without any further ado, let's play the audio for the trailer for John Dies at the End.
Someday you will face the unimaginable. It is physically impossible to avoid it.
Mr. Wong.
This slack stuff, this sauce.
You can see things you shouldn't be able to.
If I show you what's in this container, you'll never feel at one with the human race.
I realized all at once, my one chance to save the universe lay inside this bottle.
It'd be opening doors to other worlds, man.
What is that stuff, John?
The soy sauce?
That stuff.
I'm remembering things that haven't happened yet.
We were chosen by the soy sauce.
So you guys are what? Some kind of spiritualist exorcists?
Something like that.
The director of Phantasm and Bubba Hotep.
I suppose you are wondering where you are.
I'm gonna guess we're in an alternate universe of some kind.
Warns you to brandish your weapons.
Can I buy you a beer?
Lock your doors.
What the? That's the axe that slayed me.
And stay away.
Ooh.
From red meat.
Right?
But whatever you do, don't spoil the ending.
I suppose you're wondering why I'm here.
I suppose you're wondering what I'm doing with this can of gasoline.
John! John! John!
John dies at the end.
Dave, this is John. Where are you right now?
Where are you? Heaven?
Is there any way that you can steal my body?
What?
Ah, so there you go. That looks like a very... It actually looks better than Bubba Hotep, which I really liked a lot, but this one looks even better right in the trailer.
If you've seen the actual poster for the film,
mm-hmm.
It looks like your classic 70s, 80s, even earlier than that, some of the 50s, 60s, sci-fi posters with the wrinkly bits of aged, posters, and it's got a bit of a grindhouse feel to it as well.
It looks like a fantastic film.
This is definitely at the top of my must-see list. Yeah. I need to see this film.
Yeah, and Jason Pargan, the writer who is writing as David Wong, by the way, is the editor of Crack.com. And he had his own humor site for a while, Pointless Waste of Time. So, like the sense of humor is born out of a lot of those cracked articles that he had written. So I'm completely waiting for this, anxious for this movie. Apparently it was a big hit at Sundance when it premiered earlier this year.
Yeah, it's weird because it played at Sundance in January, on the 23rd of January, and a year and 2 days later, in 2013, is when it's going to be having its theatrical release. So it's done. It's in the bag, and it's been around for a while. It's just for some reason they've hung on to it. So
I guess it had to just bake for some time.
I don't know. Maybe it's weird, but. I like the look of Paul Giamatti in this, too.
Yes.
always adds a bit of a flavor to a specific flavor to the movies that he's in. So I think it should be interesting to see what he gets to add to the film. But it looks fantastic.
Yep. Can't wait to see it. What have you got for us for... Tell us a little bit about the music that you chose, because I don't recognize... I like the song that you picked, but I don't recognize the artist at all.
Okay. I have only recently come across this band. As you know, I like to dig around and try and find different bands. And, you know, I just love music. I love listening to all kinds of music.
Uh-huh.
And somebody had directed me to this particular song. And the band is called The Pierces. And The Pierces, it's actually two sisters who do their own music. They started as an indie band. And they've kind of branched out a little bit more to some more thematic sounding music. It's Alison Pierce and Catherine Pierce who are in the band, and they're both close to my age. In fact, they're 35 and 37 respectively, and so they're from New York. And basically, they put out an album several years ago. In 2007 it was. It's called 13 Tales of Love and Revenge. And essentially, there's like over half the album are murder ballads.
Wow, interesting.
And I love murder ballads. And this particular song is not only a murder ballad, but it's just a creepy fucking tune.
Uh-huh.
And the song is one that I had chosen for what would have been last week's episode. We were kind of hoping to do a Halloween spooky-themed episode. But I really liked the song, and I wanted to play it anyway. And it also kind of ties in with the horror feel from John Dies in the End as well, but this is a little bit more vengeance based, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's an especially great song.
You know what it reminds me of?
Are just absolutely superbly put together. This kind of material as music could easily come off as cheesy or you know, just ridiculous, but these girls have just done a absolutely fantastic job at this. And it truly comes across in the intent that it's supposed to, which is absolutely creepy.
It reminds me of something that I would hear in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, it wouldn't be out of place in a lot of horror movies, and, you know, come to think of it. And, I mean, the word I bandied around before was Grindhouse. It certainly wouldn't be mm-hmm. out of place in that. But at the same time, it's actually been featured in... some television shows. Let's see here. I'm looking at their wiki here, and it's been used. The single "Secret" has been used as the theme song for Pretty Little Liars.
Oh,
and it has also been featured on Gossip Girl. So it's been getting around, but. For some reason, it's just not getting as much attention as what I think these girls deserve. I think they deserve a lot of attention. They're very talented, and especially musical, and incredibly gifted to be able to come up with, you know, some kind of thematic-based song such mm-hmm. as this that mm-hmm. that doesn't come across as ridiculous and cheesy, but certainly sends the chills up your spine that it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm rambling on, so I'm going to set up now, and Andy's going to press play on the song, and this is The Pierces with "Secret."
Got a secret, can you keep it? Swear this one you'll save. Better lock it in your pocket, taking this one to the grave. If I show you, then I know you won't tell what I said. 'Cause two can keep a secret if one of them is dead. Smile like you've been told a secret. Now you're telling lies, 'cause you have sworn to keep it. But no one keeps a secret. No one keeps a secret. Why, when we do our darkest deeds, do we tell? They burn in our brains, become a living hell. 'Cause everybody tells. Keep it, swear this one you say. Better lock it in your pocket, taking this one to the grave.
So there you go.
Wow.
Pretty awesome. I was just reading a little bit more about that song, too, and it's also been used in promos for Dexter as well, which, of course, perfectly suits the...
Yep, yep. The theme of the show.
The show as well. So I'm a big fan of this band now, and really, really dig their stuff. I highly encourage people to check it out. Mm-hmm. And as always, we'll be back to bring more music for you guys to check out in future episodes of the Roundup. But right now, it's our time to jump into some of the articles and news that have been popping up here at geeksofdoom.com. Andy, I'm going to let you choose. What do you want to go with first?
Let me talk about mine first, because I have a feeling that yours is going to incite a longer discussion. So mine's going to be just kind of a brief article. And we talked about an article about a full 90-minute live-action Halo 4 movie that has been posted in 5 parts on YouTube. The Movie God wrote about this in Geeks of Doom, and we talked on the Drill Down last week's episode of the Drill Down about a brief trailer. Live-action trailer that was produced by David Fincher, but this is a five-part full movie that tells a story about a soldier named Lasky who's helped along by Master Chief at the start of the Covenant War on his course to becoming a leader on the UNMC Infinity ship. And it's going to be included with the limited edition of Halo 4 and released on Blu-ray and DVD. And so
this is an official thing. This is not like a fan movie or something.
Produced by Microsoft, official 5-part, 90-minute movie, Halo 4 movie. And I think it's fairly exciting. I mean, it's the closest thing to an actual Halo, theatrical movie that we've seen come out of, come out of Microsoft. So
I think this is Microsoft's way of saying to Hollywood, "Hey, hey,
yes,
come on now."
So I have to admit that I have not watched the movie yet, but I'm excited to see it. I can't wait to see what a real sanctioned glimpse into the live action Halo universe is going to look like. So I'm definitely going to be checking it out, and I suggest everybody check it out as well. In fact, the entire 5-part movie is embedded in the Geeks of Doom article on Geeks of Doom. So we'll have that link in the show notes, and everyone can check it out.
This is the thing I don't understand, though. I mean, we've had countless movies based on video games.
Yeah.
And Halo is one of those series that resonates very strongly with a lot of people. I mean, it's up there as a groundbreaking classic game.
Yep.
It is going to go down in the history of video games along the lines of Doom and Quake and all these revolutionary games that came out. I don't understand why nobody's actually stepped up and said, "Let's make the movie."
I think because, and maybe it's because it's such a sacred property, you know, it means so much to the fans that before they embark on doing something theatrical and big budget, they want to make sure that they have all the right people in place to do it. And that's why there had been stops and starts along the way. You know, first it was going to be, what's his name, the District 9 director.
Oh, yeah, Neil
Blomkamp.
Blomkamp?
Yeah. And then it was going to be, they talked about Peter Jackson himself, and all these names had been batted around. And I think they want to get the right people in place to do this, because it is such there's so much potential for this property. Because if it's done right, it could kick off a whole series of movies that high value franchise movies. So they want to make sure they do it right, like the Marvel movies, you know, just do it right. And I think that's
you're
probably
almost implying that Disney should purchase them.
Well, what has Disney not purchased?
Well, they have purchased Lucasfilm this week, which is the next topic
that's a great segue.
I'm thinking that I'm opening a Pandora's box by doing so, but it certainly has dominated the geek news this week, and not just the geek news, really. I mean, this made headlines in the mainstream media across the world.
Yes,
that Lucasfilm has been sold. It has now been acquired by Disney, and on the day that they announced that they were acquiring George Lucas's solely owned company, they also announced that they were proceeding forward with the sequel trilogy, beginning with Episode 7, to be released in 2015. And sources have since leaked out that George has been prepping this the sequel trilogy for the last year and a half. So one of the things I said in my article that I posted up, it was my opportunity for bragging rights, because for a couple of decades now, I've been championing the cause. I've been saying to everyone, it's inevitable. There's going to be a Star Wars sequel trilogy. It's going to happen. And fans smacked me down verbally on the web because I was saying this stuff. George doesn't want to do another one. You know, it's Darth Vader's story. It's not going to happen. As a matter of fact, Andy, you might remember right here on the Roundup, in the original incarnation of the Roundup before we moved here to Geeks of Doom, there was one episode where you brought in David Chen on the show. And he basically took the opportunity to try and ream me for liking the prequel trilogy. But when I mentioned that I believed that there was going to be a sequel trilogy, he said, and I quote, "That's moronic and preposterous." So
I can't
David
wait
Chen,
to.
I don't know if you're listening to this show. Love your podcast, mate. But come back down from the starlet fucking level that you think you're on. Come back down to earth with the rest of us.
I'm definitely going to bring that up with him.
Star Wars is now all systems go.
You know when I knew that there would be more Star Wars? I'll tell you when I knew. When there was a period of time there where George Lucas was going to direct the Red Tails movie, the movie about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes.
And when he handed that off to somebody else to direct, I knew at that moment that there was going to be another Star Wars series. Because he had an opportunity to do something that wasn't Star Wars.
Now, and this kind of leads into something else that I pointed out in the article that I put up. It was a bit of an analysis post, and already I've been shut down because of what I'm calling as the main reason for George Lucas selling the company.
Yes, well, talk about that if you would.
For years, he was saying things like, "Oh, I'm stepping away from Star Wars, and I want to do cheap independent films." And, just kind of focus on making movies I really want to make. And that was around the same time that Red Tails was coming about. And he stepped away from directing that. He's also stepped away from this spiel that he was spouting about doing small independent movies, which didn't make a lot of sense. But now that I'm thinking about it, it fits into the rationale of my article. And that is, I think he is handing over Lucasfilm, in particular his baby Star Wars, to a company that will do it justice, in my mind, because he's dying. I think he's dying. I think George Lucas has probably been diagnosed with something terminal, and he shifted gears real quick and started thinking about the future after he's gone.
Yes, well, I mean, obviously I hope that you're wrong, but I have to say that I was thinking about this for a while when the news dropped, and I could not for the life of me figure out why George Lucas would sell a property that he wholly owned, built from the ground up, from the bottom up, from scratch, and was continuing to bring in profits, a positive profit from the properties. Why would you turn around and sell that? I could not figure it out. And it occurred to me and a couple of other of my coworkers. And I have to say, as a point of disclosure here, that I actually work for the Walt Disney Company. So I was talking with a couple of coworkers, and I think we basically came to the same conclusion. And you know, it's funny, if you look at the maybe I'm reading a lot into this too, but there's a famous photo now of George Lucas signing the contract over to Bob Iger, who's the president of Disney. And if you look at that picture, there's Bob Iger's all smiles, and Lucas has almost it's a look of mortality on his face, like, you know, this is, it's not the same kind of smile, positive smiley look that that Iger has, and it's something of a almost scared look. And like I
well,
said,
I
maybe
mean,
I'm reading a lot into that.
Obviously, it was a big day for him, you know.
Yeah.
And in some ways, you know, from a masculine point of view, it would almost be, I guess it would feel like admitting defeat in some ways. Because, like you said, he built this from the ground up. He had foresight enough to and lucky enough to retain the licensing before the first movie came out. And it made him a very, very rich man. And, he retained...
He controlled
total
the
control
content
over Star Wars. And, you know, if he wanted to just simply make a buck off Star Wars, he could have, you know, just for the sake of making a buck, he could have at any stage just said to his licensing company, Lucas Licensing, just let them do whatever they want. But no, there's a lot of things that happened, like in the expanded universe, that would not have happened unless George he had the final say. He approved almost everything that went into those books.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a lot of books. That's a lot of stuff. He was a hard worker, dude. He really cared about it a lot. And so it didn't make sense to me when the announcement was first made that he was letting go of that licensing, letting go of that control. And the only thing I can think of is that you know, he's been diagnosed with something, and this has given him the chance to choose what happens to Star Wars and Lucasfilm before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, it would have been caught up in legal hell for God knows how long. But even in his statement, his first comments that came out on the deal when it was signed, and I'm quoting here, he says, "I've always believed that Star Wars could live beyond me, and I thought it was important to set up the transition during my lifetime."
Yeah, yeah.
You would never have said that like 10 years ago.
Right.
So that's my call. I'm saying that he is he's most likely dying, and I think we're going to see very little of George Lucas over the next few years.
You know what? The other thought that occurred to me when I saw all this news is this: it must have been an awkward bit of news for 20th Century Fox. Because they're like, hey, we distributed every single Star Wars movie that ever was released, and you decide that you're going to turn around and sell the franchise to a major motion picture studio, and it's not us.
Yeah, and the other thing about that, I think there's some fans that are a little butthurt about this too, and that is that the future Star Wars movies.
Yes.
All 20 of them, because you know that's going to happen.
Right.
Is not going to have the
20th Century Fox fanfare, right?
Yeah. So that's going to be very interesting to see. I think it'll probably turn out that it'll just be silence with the Lucasfilm logo, the Disney logo, and then bang into the movie.
Yeah. I mean, though, that 20th Century Fox fanfare with that CinemaScope extender. You know, that was an iconic part of the Star Wars movies.
It's not just that, but any time you ever went to see a movie that was also released by 20th Century Fox that had that fanfare at the beginning, it would always send you back to a time that you had sat in a theater and watched Star Wars.
Yes, yes.
You know, that's how much Star Wars defined the Fox brand.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure that they're feeling a little sore about that. Someone else that's probably feeling a little sore at the moment is Dark Horse Comics.
Oh.
And Dark Horse Comics have done had the licensing on Star Wars comics and graphic novels since the early 90s.
Does Disney have their own?
Or I guess it would be Marvel, wouldn't it? How that pans out, whether Lucasfilm is going to, and Lucas Licensing are going to continue with that relationship, or whether Disney is going to override that and say, no, we've got Marvel over here.
Right.
You know, save a bit of money.
Can you imagine all of the potential for the cross company licensing, like Marvel, like the Avengers meets the Star Wars universe?
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen, and I'll tell you why. And the reason that that's not going to happen is because we can look at the Marvel acquisition as a model. In 2009, when they were purchased, there were a lot of fans, including myself, that winced when the announcement was made that Disney had purchased Marvel. And we all thought it was going to be the worst. We were going to see, like, movies with Mickey Mouse starring as fucking
Spider-Man. Let me interrupt you here for a second. As I said, I'm a Disney employee here. And we are doing a Phineas and Ferb Avengers crossover episode.
That's like an animated show, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to get into that a little deeper in a second. So there are going to be some crossovers on that scale. There's not going to be like a movie that comes out in 20 years called Star Wars versus the Avengers. Or at least I would hope not. But if you look at the way they've handled Marvel, they basically just bought Marvel and left them to do what they need to do. And then all the animated series, you know, that don't have the same continuity as the films, you know, have been distributed on the Disney TV networks and stuff like that. This deal actually also gives a lot of potential to the live action Star Wars television series as well, because not only does Disney have their channels aimed at children, but they also own ABC.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a perfect place for them to distribute a live action Star Wars movie, television series, I should say. So this is going to be nothing but good news for Star Wars TV and Star Wars films.
Sure.
The comics and the books, on the other hand, no one's really sure how that's going to go at this point, because they haven't said anything about that. So we'll just have to wait and see how that pans out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2015, I'm assuming it's going to be May 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars Episode 7 is coming out. I'm going to warn our listeners at this point, at the moment, there's a lot of bullshit going around. Yeah, and yeah, yeah. This is normal.
Yes, at this point.
This is absolutely normal, right, for Star Wars. The hardest thing to deal with when it comes to Star Wars is sorting fact from fiction,
right,
in terms of what's going to be in the film or not.
Basically,
there's some of you that are going to be not wanting to worry about the spoilers, and then there's other people like me who will be not diving neck deep into them to try and work out what the movie is going to be about.
Yeah, if you don't
hear... a lot of the rumors that are going around at the moment are most likely crap.
Right.
But what I can tell you that I think, this is my speculation at this point, Episode 7 will most likely feature Mark Hamill as a main cast member, but he's not going to be in any of the others after that.
Oh, you don't think they could possibly get Mark Hamill? He's too big.
No, he'll be in. Harrison Ford might be up for a cameo, maybe. That would be nice. I can't see him wanting to do a whole movie as Han Solo, and it wouldn't even make sense.
Yeah.
They'll probably bring Carrie Fisher back for a few of the movies for cameos, but I think this particular series that's coming out is basically going to be literally a changing of the guard. And
sure.
Lucas has said before that the sequel trilogy, the main theme of the sequel trilogy was going to be focusing on Yoda's line from Return of the Jedi of passing on what you have learned.
It's
going to be passing on the Star Wars characters to a new generation.
It's the Star Wars equivalent of Star Trek Generations, the film where they...
I wouldn't go that far, because Generations was a terrible movie.
Well,
it's a terrible example.
Okay, but, you don't know what this new movie is going to be like yet. But I'm saying that thematically, it's the same.
Yeah. Thematically, if it's a relay, you're passing the baton onwards to a new generation of actors and characters and planets and galaxies and aliens.
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to make the whole Star Wars universe even further enriched than what it's been before. I've got a book here actually called Simon Pegg's autobiography. And he does nothing in this book except, hold up how glorious the original trilogy is and condemns the prequel trilogy. And there's a lot of fans out there that don't like the prequel trilogy, and I understand that. But Simon Pegg actually makes a really good observation. And that is that when the prequels were coming out, George Lucas had gotten to a point in his career where... he no longer could allow people in to be his no men, not his yes men. He was surrounded by yes men.
Sure.
But there was no one around him to say, no, that's not a good idea, George. And with this being passed over to Disney now, you're going to have that little bit of extra control over that. And so it should be a boost to the quality of the Star Wars stuff that's going to come out.
Here's an interesting thing to think about too. And my last point on this is that along with the acquisition of Lucasfilm comes Industrial Light and Magic and Skywalker Sound. I know for a fact that Industrial Light and Magic has been operating at a loss for about 30 years. They've been losing money, and George Lucas has basically been funding that loss because...
You're talking about ILM?
Yes, Yes.
Yeah, well, ILM is an interesting case because up until, I want to say early 90s, mid-90s, up until that period, they were the bastions of visual effects.
Sure.
You know, and people who were making movies would always turn to ILM. And then all of a sudden, all these, with the advent of, digital effects and everything, you know, anybody with a MacBook could do their own movie. Right. And so you had this gold rush, if you will, of all these new special effects companies. I mean, one of the famous examples is Weta, Peter Jackson's Weta.
Sure.
You know, look how blossom they've become over the last few years.
Right.
You know, and there's a whole bunch of other visual effects crews out there as well. And I mean, if you look at the credits on some of the recent Marvel movies, they actually outsourced a lot of the visual effects to multiple companies. Years ago, it used to be we're just going with ILM, but now it's almost like they're dime a dozen that they're able to outsource the visual effects to multiple different companies to take care of certain sequences and stuff like that.
Right.
Could you imagine how much money Disney is going to be saving on visual effects for their films with ILM and Pixar under their belt?
Well, but the point I'm trying to make is that Lucas has been funding their ILM's losses for years because mm-hmm. he felt that it was worth it overall to have the best visual effects, even if it was at an operating loss. Disney is not in the business of funding operating losses. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens with ILM. I think this news is probably the people who this will affect the worst will be ILM, because they'll have to either turn a profit or experience some layoffs.
I think what you're going to find, I'm sure Disney have got some existing visual effects crews of their own under their own roof.
We've pretty much gutted. Like, we had another great effects crew at the lot called the Secret Lab, and they actually, amongst some of the other great movies that they've done effects for, they did completely 100% the film Dinosaur. Remember that film, CGI film? Actually, mm-hmm. a really good film. But it wasn't worth whatever they were funding to keep that effects house open. It wasn't worth it, and they closed it down. So everything they've pretty much done has been outsourced. So they'll have ILM in house, but now ILM will have to turn some sort of a profit. So it's interesting.
So who did the visual effects for Tron Legacy then? Let me take a look here.
I believe it was ILM.
Digital Domain is one here.
James Cameron's company.
Right. So Disney aren't even using their internal...
No.
Visual effects. They use Skywalker Sound for Sam.
Yeah, they've used Skywalker Sound on a ton of Disney films. Like that's almost their exclusive sound house. And they're good people.
This is big news. Can you imagine what Comic-Con's going to be like next year? I would hope that Disney would have a panel for Star Wars there. I would imagine they will. But this is huge news. Huge news for Star Wars fans. And I am extremely optimistic. I think we're going to get a killer Star Wars film. I think it's going to piss off a lot more fans because, you know, not everyone's going to be happy. But I'm just going to thumb my nose at them and enjoy it for what it is. Great mm-hmm. entertainment, lots of fun. Lightsabers, spaceships, aliens. What more could you ask for?
Yep. I cannot wait. I think whatever we see is going to be something different than what we've seen before. So that, and especially, there's whole other conversations that we can have about who's going to be directing this film. You know, who would direct the sequels coming afterwards? Yeah, obviously, like the number one choice, if you're talking about in-house directors, would be Joss Whedon, who mm-hmm. did a terrific job with the Avengers movie and has all the geek cred to back himself up with Star Wars.
Joss Whedon's not going to do it, and I'll tell you why. He's got his hands full with Avengers 2.
Oh, sure, but I'm saying...
Which is coming out 2014, and that'll only give him a year to focus on Star Wars, so it's not going to happen. J.J. Abrams, that was another one that got thrown up there. He's going to be too busy with the Star Trek thing, although he could probably be brought on board
we're talking about...
So the question is at the moment...
Not this movie coming up, but the sequel. 7. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're not talking about this current one. This current one's probably too... The horse is out of the barn for this one. We're talking about who might be coming in for the one following up.
Yeah, yeah. So... I don't know. I'm thrilled. I think it's great news, and but I think it's also sad news because I think I am actually on the money about saying that George Lucas is most likely dying, and you know, it's going to be a sad day when that happens. But
everybody,
I'm going to segue directly into this into Social Blend, if you don't mind, Andy.
Sure.
Because last week's episode was all about this. It was just Tom Cheridar and myself on Social Blend last week. Uh-huh. We had some tech difficulties. So we couldn't get Tare on the show. We were getting a really bad connection with her, which we're assuming was related to the devastation from Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast, preventing us from getting a clear connection with her. And Jay couldn't be with us. So it was just me and Tom, and we did a short episode dissecting and analyzing the news of Lucasfilm being purchased by Disney and what it meant for the films, television, books, video games, and comic books. So we really, really, quite literally drilled down into it and examined what it's going to be. And we came to the conclusion that, yes, this is absolutely great news for Lucasfilm and for the Star Wars franchise. Tom and I were at odds about my theory that George Lucas is dying. So there we go. That's what we did on the most recent episode of Social Blend. Coming up this week on Social Blend, well, we will be following up on some of the updated news that has come mm-hmm. out about the Star Wars stuff. But our big focus is going to be on the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, which has been dominating the news this week. So we'll definitely be talking about that, including some interesting stories, stuff that really isn't being covered too much as well. For example, there's been an oil spill at a Saudi-backed plant near New York. Hmm. Not seeing very much news coverage on that at the moment. We're also going to talk a little bit about Haiti and the Caribbean and how much they were hit by Sandy as well, which hasn't been getting enough coverage as far as I'm concerned. We'll touch briefly on the election, although we've basically been absconding from election coverage. And the only reason we'll be covering it is because Social Blend records the day after the election. So will we have Obama back in office, or will we have President Romney?
Who knows?
So there you go. And I'm sure perhaps maybe the election might be on the tip of your tongue on the drill down as well for what it might mean for tech news. Would it not be, Andy?
Well, we will absolutely cover that, if maybe not in depth, but at least we will discuss the loose ramifications of that for sure on the upcoming episode of the drill down.
You know that New Jersey is going to be doing online voting.
Yes.
Because of the Sandy. So I don't know whether that's going to be something that you'll cover or not, but that's big news as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That they're actually going to be doing online voting is an incredible piece of news.
Well, maybe this is the kick in the pants that was necessary to kind of get online voting together on a grand scale. And maybe if it works out well in New Jersey without any sort of fraud issues, that it could be the example for future elections.
Absolutely. So what else is going on the drill down, mate?
Well, this last episode of the drill down, we talked about the Apple's complete product line refresh, the iPad mini, and the new all the rest of the iPad line, the slimmer iMac, that super slim 5mm on the edge iMac, the 13-inch MacBook Pro with the Retina display, the full-size next generation iPad with the lightning connector, which completely invalidates my 6 month old new iMac with the 30-pin connector. I mean, the iPad with 30-pin connector. Mm. We also talked about some shakeups in the executive level at Apple with the longtime iOS vice president Scott Forstall leaving Apple and being replaced with Johnny Ive, who's going to be heading up the iOS design team now, as well as his current duties as product as actual physical design.
Is that the fellow that was fired because of not willing to apologize about Apple Maps?
Well, yes. I mean, not so much not apologizing, but basically kind of the legacy that he has had with Apple Maps, as well as he initiated the Siri launch, and Siri has not quite lived up to its potential yet either, plus a number of things. He's also he also had been developing, to boil it down in simplest terms, he was starting to get too big for his britches. He was developing a following of people who had seen him as like the next Steve Jobs, and it was undermining Tim Cook's ability to lead. That's the scuttlebutt from the inside scuttlebutt from some of Apple insiders. So he had to go. We also talked about Microsoft's launch of Windows 8, the Surface tablet, and Windows Phone 8, as well as the launch of Smart Glass on the Xbox, which I think is going to be one of the trailblazing technologies of the coming, basically everyone's going to be doing it. It's essentially Xbox's the second screen utility that right now everybody's doing second screen kind of as individual apps. But I think that Microsoft is trailblazing the lead here with the second screen as a overall systemic sort of application. And as we mentioned, we talked about that Halo 4 trailer produced by David Fincher. The upcoming episode of The Drill Down, we're going to be talking about the Disney Lucasfilm merger. We can't not talk about that, even though there's kind of a loose connection to tech. There's a broad connection for geek news, which is part of our purview on the show. Plus whatever else comes up during the week, we're going to be talking briefly about, like I said, about the ramifications of the election results on tech. Romney is not known as a tech centric leader, not in to the extent that Obama is. So if he happens to be elected president, who knows where that's going to turn. So we'll see.
It's going to be bad news for tech if you ask me, but you know, that's life.
Yeah.
I've got a story for you.
Yeah.
You might want to be interested in covering. I'll send you the link in the back end chat here so that you can get it. But article that got published over at techrepublic.com this week, which is a website that focuses mainly on enterprise use of software and operating systems and hardware. That, you know, connects with thousands of businesses and thousands of educational institutions across the world.
Sure.
They had their own survey, and they found that 74% of organizations have absolutely no plans to deploy Windows 8.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me at all. But you know, we talked about this briefly on last week's show. I think that, well, because this speaks to an overall sort of conflict, especially in enterprise, that desktop computing is going away. Not desktop computing, general computing is going away. Overall, people are relying more on tablet-based computing, and I think that a lot of enterprises afraid to commit to that. And
I'm going to disagree with you there because I actually work in tech.
Sure.
And the trend that I'm noticing now, what you might be talking about, you might be talking about much further long term.
I'm talking about much further long term. Yes.
Yeah. Well, when I'm talking, what I'm talking about is the current trend at the moment is that we're seeing less reliance on laptops, and people are using both tablets and their desktop computers. For higher powered,
but what tablets are they using?
Like that. So that's what we're seeing now. But Windows 8 is just simply, you know, from a tech support perspective, not designed for a desktop environment. It's just clearly not.
Sure.
It's going to be a nightmare to support. And the problem and the nightmare that we're looking at is that a lot of hardware manufacturers are now jumping away from BIOS. And employing UEFI, or UFI, as I like to call it, which can be made to specify the minimum operating system you can deploy on that computer. And if Dell and HP and a lot of these other companies that supply a lot of computers to enterprise go ahead and lock Windows 8 in, that means that we cannot support Windows 7 anymore, and we must go to Windows 8. We won't have a choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
We can't wait for Windows 9 or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So might be a good chance to go to Mac.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that basically people are going to have to start moving away from desktop and general computing overall, especially in enterprise. I think people are going to start moving to tablet based computing, and this might be the prod that pokes them along. So
it might be, but looking at it from a practical argument as well, like you know, you're looking at word processing and spreadsheets and databases in enterprise environments, and that just doesn't work well on a tablet situation for a lot of people. So it's going to be, you know, I agree with you that the tablets and, I mean, that's going to be the way of the future, but I think we're, you know, there's going to be slow steps towards it.
Yep.
Very much in the same way that, you know, 64-bit operating systems have taken ages to take off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see what happens with Windows 8, but I think it's going to be a disaster for Microsoft.
So, Greg, tell us where we can find Social Blend on this coming week online.
So, Social Blend you can catch at social-blend.com. We record Wednesday nights and release for a Thursday morning release. So you can listen to us or, you know, don't listen to us on your drive. Just play it at work. Bug everyone in your workplace for Social Blend. Because, you know, we that's how we roll.
All right.
What about the Drill Down, mate?
Drill Down you can catch usually on Fridays. Friday mornings we release our MP3. So that you can listen to it on your drive or listen or log on to geeksofdoom.com and listen to us online as well. Whatever you're comfortable with, we're on Stitcher now. So we've attracted a number of followers from Stitcher. You know, just subscribe to our RSS and you'll get it in your whatever your personal media player is of choice. Every week we're going to be recording this coming week. We're going to be recording for 2 weeks out. We're going to be recording, a week of headlines, which will include the Disney Lucas merger, and the following week's episode will be our annual, the Drill Down holiday gift guide. So we'll be recording that for the following week as well. So that's what you're going to be looking forward to for the next 2 weeks on the Drill Down. And I guess that's it, right?
That's it, yeah. Extended edition of the Geeks of Doom Roundup this week. And, of course, you can catch us, as always, along with the other podcasts, Skull Island, TARDIS Blend.
Yes,
and, TARDIS Blend. You know, Comics of Doom, Flicks of Doom.
Uh-huh.
You can catch us all at geeksofdoom.com. We're also on iTunes, same with the Drill Down and Social Blend. You know, and on the Facebooks and the Twitters. You just Google us and you'll find us. And we'll catch you next week hopefully next week, because, you know, you said you might not be around next week.
Yes, maybe we won't
off and about
have
somewhere.
A podcast next week. We'll see. Maybe it'll be a surprise.
Maybe. We'll have to work it out. All right. Well, that's it. We'll catch you next week for another edition of the Roundup, if not the week after.
Yes. Dilly Gaff. Yeah.